Do you know? Do you ever come across the White Company?
The White
Company. The White Company.
Yeah.
They sell nothing but white things. White sheets, white pillowcases, white shirts, white trousers. Pure white. They're in the UK, and they're in more than one place. That for I first came across them in Bath. They know that I won't be sort of making up my mind between lots of different colours. I want design, and it's white.
Well, that choice has been made for you then, hasn't it? Well, that, there you are. There's the attraction. There's the attraction of the business. There's a genuinely attractive business because they've made the choice for you already in terms of your choice of colours. Because it's one.
Welcome to Business Jazz with Paul O'Mahony and Roger Overall. The podcast about how to be genuinely attractive in business today.
It's a bit like they say about highly effective people. Steve Jobs would be the most obvious example of this. And I think Mark Zuckerberg is another example of this. But Steve Jobs famously wore black turtleneck sweaters and jeans and white sneakers. And that's all he wore.
Yes.
And the thinking behind it is, well, there's a decision less that he has to make in the morning. He does not have to expend any mental energy, any of his vast, huge intellect on what shall I wear today, because that choice has already been made. I'm wearing jeans, I'm wearing a black turtleneck sweater, and I've got my white sneakers.
There's another advantage in that, which is that every person who is expecting to meet Steve Jobs is able to predict and be correct the clothes he'll wear.
Yes.
Now, if somebody finds that they are a successful predictor of something, what happens to their self-esteem?
Well, it must go up.
Right. And if your self-esteem is up, what happens to your willingness to buy?
I would imagine it's on the same level. It reaches those same heights.
So from a selling point of view, there is reason to suspect that you're better to be wearing the same clothes every day. Obviously clean ones, so you'd have more than one pair of jeans, more than one grey jacket, more than one white t-shirt, more than one orange-laced, green-blue sneakers from Isex or something. But that would be you, Roger. You would... And you would decide that these are the clothes I do all my business in.
I've been trying to... actually, it's funny because I've been trying to wear more shirts. I think I like shirts, but I never wear shirts because they're too much hassle. T-shirts are much easier, so I tend to wear a lot of T-shirts. But I remember when I worked in the UK and I worked for a media consultancy, if we had to meet a client, we were smart and we had suits and often three-piece suits and everything. But if we were just in the office, it would be jeans and T-shirts for everybody, including the partners. And I often wondered that if we had a client drop by the office
exactly what I'm thinking.
Unexpectedly, what they would think.
That would not be what I'd call genuine.
No.
Because you wouldn't be being yourself. You would be, clearly, they would say, you're dressing just for me.
Ah, now there's a very good point you make, because that's true. We were just dressing for the client. Because the thinking of the partners was, when you meet somebody, when you're having a face-to-face meeting with somebody, so on the one hand, you've just given the example of what happens if I meet somebody and they're wearing the clothes that I expect them to meet.
That's
good.
Yeah.
So the thinking behind the way we worked was that when we have face-to-face meetings with clients, it was always on their premises, it was always in London, they never came to us, and in fact, we were so out of the way, it would have been something of a minor miracle had they stumbled upon us. Anyway, that's beside the point. But the thinking was, we dressed the way the clients dressed when we met them, because that immediately sets a rapport as well. That sets a communication message, that we're putting them at ease because we're wearing what they're wearing. So we didn't turn up for meetings wearing our jeans and T-shirts in their offices, because that would be a dissonance for them. So by turning up in suits and ties, thinking was, well, now we're in a we've taken all that, that we can that visual communication is taken care of.
Question.
Yes.
How would your clients have felt if Steve Jobs came to visit them in a suit and tie, dressed the same way as them? Besides the fact that they would have taken photographs and immediately shoved them up on the internet if they wanted to,
my goodness, what is
to go viral, right? But how would they have felt? You see, my theory is, or, you know, again to be tested, is that, number one, you're absolutely correct. It takes the issue of clothing from the point of view of rapport. There's absolutely no hoop for the client to jump through. We're all the same in this office. But what if one of the clients is sitting there saying to themselves, I know these guys are dressing up for us because I was talking to Joe the other day in the other company, and Joe's company never wear suits. Joe said that Roger came, and I said, ah, he always wears such smart suits, doesn't he? And Joe said, no. So then, ah, they're dressing for us, right. So then the client says to himself or herself, that means they are not confident that we can cope with difference. They don't think we can handle anything that's different from what we think already. They are just giving us what they think we already want because they think we can't handle conflict, tension, friction, anything. They don't think we're mature enough to recognize that they're being themselves and we're being ourselves. Supposing one of them said that, and then after you left, said to the other partners, these guys only want our business. They don't really care about our business. They dress up to comply. They're stringing us along. They could very easily see 10 ways our business could be better. But because they think we'd oppose it, they're not saying it. And they're terrified they'll lose the account. So terrified that they're dressing up in a way that I don't think they're comfortable with. Or else if they are comfortable with it, they're chameleons. What happens if that conversation goes on?
So once we've picked ourselves up off the floor from laughing, because that's a hell of a string of suppositions. Quite frankly, the company that I worked for, that's fine. If you have a board member who thinks that, and he can persuade the rest of the board members that they should drop us
on that basis.
On that basis. Absolutely, please do.
Yes.
Because
that's too trivial, right?
Well, you could say it's too trivial. You could say you are putting more stock in that side of it because already that person has in that string said this company is not doing the best for us, and of course that was never true. This company doesn't have our interests at heart. They could be thinking of 10 different ways that we could be improving the business.
Now, I'm wearing blue trousers. Supposing the day came that I thought to myself is, every time Roger comes to my kitchen, he dresses one way. But when he goes to somebody else's kitchen, he dresses another way. So all these years, I thought Roger was completely relaxed about his clothing and relaxed about me and all that sort of thing, and that we had genuine rapport. Now I realise that he's planning his dress, right?
So well, I would never plan my dress.
I know, but I'm talking about, you see, put it this way, Risa Clifton, who was once chair of that biggest branding agency in Europe, huge consultancy. She was chair of it. She's no longer chair of it, but, you know, she went to consult with and all sorts of companies. She always dressed, I have this on good authority, always dressed in the little black dress from that
Coco Chanel.
Astonishing Coco Chanel. She always dressed in a Coco Chanel little black dress, always the same. She always wore the same jewellery. Now, when I say this, the Coco Chanel dress, I mean that she may have had 10 of these dresses. Always drank green tea.
Mm-hmm.
So much so that before she was coming to the company, people ran around in the company to make sure they had green tea in stock for Lisa Clifton, because that was the only thing she drank. That was regarded as her brand. All I can say is that if it was ever mentioned to me, it was in tones of approval by somebody from the company on the grounds that that's Rita Clifton. That's Steve Jobs. I had a brief flurry, terribly brief flurry in change agents of deciding I would always wear the same clothing.
I've had that thinking myself. Actually, just on the I always want the same, here's a story for you. There was a captain who always insisted on having his tea in his mug to the brim.
Right. Yeah. Now, that was his.
That was his. Th- yeah. That was his thing. So he would. So he would demand that of whoever made the tea for him, and of course we're on a ship.
Okay. Excuse me.
So nobody was able to do this. Nobody was ever able to give him the mug as full as he wanted. Except one man. One man always managed it. Always would arrive at the bridge.
With.
In the roughest weather.
Yes. I know how he did it. He carried a cup half full to just around the corner from the captain of the ship. But he also carried a jug of the second half.
Oh, you're
the
tea so cup. Close.
And he poured it in just as he was handing it
you're
to him.
You're so close.
No?
No, yeah. He did not have a second. He did have a half cup. He carried the rest of the tea in his mouth. Moving on. anyway, that's a story I once heard, which is probably hugely apocryphal. It must be. It can't be true. Anyway, look.
That story has to be useful.
Well, it's fun as well in a podcast.
But imagine it coming at the start of a speech where you wanted to say something that would really cause the audience to go,
it's a genuinely attractive way to start a speech, isn't it? By saying something that people will latch onto and pay attention. Because they might think, as you walked up to your up to the stage, wearing this grey suit that you always wear, or maybe wearing a grey suit that you never wear, and people are expecting you to walk up in jeans and a t-shirt, and then they see you in the grey suit, and they think, oh, this is going to be the world's most boring speech. This is going to be a PowerPoint presentation that's going to be projected and he's going to read off the PowerPoint presentation. But then you start your speech with that story. Well, that would...
Well, you see, one of the attractions about that is that, first of all, you've given the audience something to work on. You've given them a conundrum. Like you put it to me, how did this unusual thing happen? I immediately paid attention because, you know, I like to try and solve problems, you know. And so do a lot of people, you know. They don't... And it was such a fun thing that I wouldn't have felt, I didn't feel a complete failure when I failed to come up with the correct answer. And the answer was so wow. And in a way, you've given me a story now, which I will be able to pass on to somebody else. And I immediately have found an application for your story in a completely, which is good in the podcast, let's say, relevant to what we're talking about, or it came organically out of how can we give Rita Clifton what Rita Clifton wants, or put it another way, demands, because Rita Clifton might have, in the event of the client not having green tea, taken green tea out of her Coco Chanel handbag and said, well, in that case, I brought my own, which of course is... How do you say face if Rita Clifton has to bring her own tea?
It is. I see. And because the clothing thing is one aspect of it. Because you posed the question about, okay, well, what if a board member had gone down that track? So on the one hand, you can say the consistency of clothing is very important, because if you don't show up wearing the clothing people expect you to wear, then they think there's an inauthenticity, there's something not genuine about the interaction. So that's one thing. But on the other hand, if your company consistently does well above and beyond, and that is the expectation of the service that you deliver, and that expectation is always met, which weighs heavier? And would one not outweigh the other? Would that board member not be talked down? And would they not say, well, hang on a minute, first of all, we approached this company to work for us because they don't just work with everybody, and we're lucky that they actually decided to work with us. Since we've been working with them, these are the results. They're through the roof, and they're consistently through the roof, and we've consistently had fantastic experience with them. We've consistently had first-rate work. And here you are, because one of them turned up in a T-shirt for another client, suggesting that we should drop them. Surely, what weighs heavier? Because I understand your point. I understand the point about clothing. I understand it as a means of communication. I understand. Because you could also say, one other board member might say, well, that's fine, but we like to see people in a three-piece suit. Mm-hmm. And the other people that they deal with, they might like to see people in T-shirts and jeans. So here's the thing that happened to me. I was out with a group of people, and my accent sometimes changes depending on who I'm talking to. And I said this to one of the guys, Welshman. I said, do you know, I've noticed that this happens to me.
Well, that you're now speaking with a Welsh accent you're speaking to.
I do not attempt to do accents because I'm
terrible. No, this is about on... Yeah,
but anyway, so we had this conflict, and he said, but do you know what that is? And I said, I don't know. I said, I find that very difficult because it's almost like my identity shifts. And he says, well, do you know what I think it is? He says,
go on.
You like making people feel comfortable.
Right.
So you match the way you speak to the way the person you're communicating with speaks.
This is pure NLP, neuro-linguistic programming thinking, which is all about the fact that, you know, the best way I can get into rapport with you, or one of the ways I can get into rapport with you, is that I can mirror the way you're sitting on the chair.
Mm-hmm.
I can mirror where your hands are. And if I am very experienced at neurolinguistic programming and using it, I can gradually and test to see, will you come with me if I shift my body language? If you don't, back to you, your body language. A little later in the conversation, the same thing.
That sounds very
thought through. That can work with somebody. Supposing you come to meet me with your arms crossed, right? Indicating, close my negative attitude. You're not going to get anything out of me today, Paul. I want you to get out of that mood or that stance. So I go into, very consciously, very deliberately, closed arms, mirroring exactly. So the two, in this case we'll say men, are there with both of them with arms crossed and legs crossed as well and whatever. There isn't a sign of an open gesture at all. And then at a certain point in the conversation, I unwind a little bit. I judge how much you're prepared to move, or I aim to move you by moving myself. You notice what I'm doing, very unconsciously, whatever, and perhaps as time goes on, you move out. And you can watch people do this. I have watched people in situations, probably neither of them are even trying to do it, but you can judge by watching and body language that that conversation began in tension, now it's in relaxation.
Mm-hmm.
But can I go back one tiny bit to the question of what if the supplier who supplies the same type of clothes as the client is, you know, working with the client is terrifically successful during the time. Is it partly because the supplier dressed the same way as the client? Or is it in spite of that? Would the same success have been achieved if there was a divergence in clothing between them and there was that difference and that diversity was seen as a strength? That, you know, by implication, you come from the corporate world with your suits and your ties. We come from the more freewheeling. Your culture is a bit tight, you want to loosen it up, you want to get more creativity out of your people, you want people to be less siloed. We're the agency, we are more relaxed ourselves. You know, when we go and talk to your staff, they know we're a successful agency. They know that it's possible to be successful while being a bit more loose. The whole thing is a fascinating topic. Have we killed it to death? Or do you think there's more in this issue about what to do? Is there any formula?
Is there a formula?
Or are we just saying that this topic is worth thinking about?
I think we're saying it's worth thinking about, but I don't think we've reached a solid conclusion. Because the thought experiment there is, well, is it because of or despite? Well, that's an impossible, that's an unknowable, because you'd have to have an alternate universe and you'd have to be able to see what happens in the alternate universe. But
do A/B testing?
But you can't, you see, because you'd need the same client, the exact same client and the exact same people in the exact same circumstances.
Well, we send in two teams. Each team needs to work with the same group of people. And we see which team achieves the highest
results. Well, even then, scientifically, I think a scientist would say, no, they can't work with the same group of people because they'd be cross-contaminating somehow. Anyway, but to your point, I think it's genuinely attractive to say, well, I think there's a lot more to talk about here, but we're not going to, because we're going to leave the audience wanting more.
Right. Have we run out of time?
I'll have a look.
Is there time for, you know, you, for example, to bring up something that you think people... Well, that you find genuinely attractive and that you're going to put in front of people so that those who find it genuinely attractive will be satisfied. Because you can't be genuinely attractive to everybody.
No, you can't.
Right.
I don't know how to answer that question, quite honestly. There's 7 minutes left.
Can I offer you a cup of tea while you think about that?
No, you cannot, because you're tethered to the recording device. And if you move, that will be the end of the recording straight away. It would just stop... Dead.
Well, the only then way of getting a cup of tea into this program, into this podcast, is because I happen to have a dog in the corner who has been trained to make tea. I could wake him up.
Let sleeping dogs lie.
I did have
a topic that I wanted to discuss, but I think it's worthy of more than just 7 minutes. But actually, no. Let's do it anyway. The Falcon X Heavy launch recently, where Elon Musk fired a Tesla with a spaceman in it into space.
Is this the thing he's fired a rocket up with a car in it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we're going to gloss over...
What's the name of the company that did this, by the way? Did you say Falcon X?
No, I think it's Space... I think it's this... I think the company
anyway,
is called SpaceX.
Send a car into space.
That's not the appeal to me. I mean, there's loads of things that appeal to me about what he did. But I want to... I mean, I could talk about the fact that it's the David Bowie song, Life on Mars. I could talk about the fact that on the dashboard it says Don't Panic, which is a reference to one of the finest books ever written, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, or radio series. I mean, we just reeled it. It's a radio series is how it started. One of the best radio series ever. All these are tremendously attractive. The fact that the rocket has reusable launch mechanism and that two of these boosters landed in perfect synchrony with each other. Okay, they lost the third bit, but they had intended to retrieve that as well. The fact that it costs less than $100 million to launch, and NASA is working on an equivalent, and it will cost $1 billion every time they launch. Forget all that. At this time of mass, and I think people missed, in my mind, the single most important thing. Because on the circuit board, somewhere in this device that got fired into space, there's a plaque. And it says, made on Earth by humans, or made by humans on Earth, one of the
okay,
two.
Made,
I find
yeah.
that massively attractive, because one of the things that I find very difficult at the moment is the divisiveness that is creeping in. America is divided, Britain is divided, everybody's divided, I see a resurgence, if you like, of nationalism.
So and will you make this... relevant to how to be genuinely attractive?
Well,
this is just
genuinely attractive to me.
This
is the business being human, but this is also the business saying the only thing that matters, doesn't matter whether it was made in Ireland, doesn't matter if it was made in Britain, doesn't matter if it was proudly made in America, that doesn't matter. What matters is that it was made on Earth by humans, hugely inclusive. The only entity who could get upset, who would feel excluded to that, are the Martians, who unfortunately now are not going to get the Tesla circling around the planet. Probably they didn't want it anyway, because it's something went wrong with the launch. But at this time of divisiveness, I find that plaque has huge significance, and I think the message it sent out to me was very, very appealing. As a business, the company, and I think the company's called SpaceX, I find that incredibly appealing.
One of the things that I think is terribly useful about this example is if you can have a pithy phrase that is very memorable and resonates with a large number of people, including people who will never want to buy a rocket and send it into space themselves. So, for example, let's go back to the paint business, a pithy phrase by the paint company which will appeal to loads of people who may never want to buy paint themselves. You're giving those people something to remember, to talk about, something that might encourage them to do what you've done, which is tell the story to me about the business you've experienced. Mm. So that pithy phrase, which is broader than the short term, all those of you who want to buy paint. So for example, a pithy phrase in the paint shop, best paint supplier in Cork. They only have one shop, right? If that was changed to, okay, off the top of my head, purveyors of comfortable living. Loads of people who don't want paint want comfortable living. So this paint shop is dedicated to something bigger than paint.
Mm.
Similarly, Musk is doing all this thing on behalf of all humanity, not just the shareholders of Musk's company.
This is true, but also, I mean, immediately I have that image in my mind, which we all have, of the American flag flying over the moon. Contrast that with what Elon Musk has done, which is to say, no, this is all of us. Doesn't matter which country you're in. This is all of us. I'm not claiming this launch. I'm not claiming this piece of art, this stunt, this whatever you want to call it. I'm not claiming it for a country. I'm going to say we're all in this together, and we all, as humans, have put this thing in space, and we all, as humans, are working towards travelling to Mars.
Well, you know that the American effort to put people on the moon, which was successful.
And a huge, I mean, when you think about it, technologically, what an incredible thing to have done within a decade.
You know that that was done. It was the American trip to the moon. Supposing I was to tell you that half of the people who worked on that project were not American citizens, that they were immigrants, that whole team had people drawn from 50 different countries, and I'm talking about the big team, the people who made the rivets, the people who made the pipes, whatever, that whole human enterprise was made happen by humans from loads of different countries.
From planet Earth.
So, for example, supposing that rocket had gone up with, on the side of it, tiny little flags of 180 different countries. This was a trip to the moon, it could be said, on behalf of humanity, made happen by humanity. I wonder what influence that might have had on the Cold War.
That's a very good question to end the podcast on. Paul, where can people find out about you?
Well, I now work for Show and Tell Communications. So on the Show and Tell website, that is showandtellcommunications.net.
We need to talk about this in an episode. We need to explain what on earth has been going on. But yes, you can find out. You can read about Paul on showandtellcommunications.net. Yes, Paul is working with us. Thank goodness, because we now have I'm sure you'll agree, listener, the amazingly deep and rich resources of Paul's intellect is at our disposal.
I just want to say that the reason that I'm working for Show and Tell Communications is precisely because Show and Tell Communications has become genuinely attractive in business today to a supplier of services, me.